to apologize. We are missing a board member who is on their way but stuck in traffic. So we will we'll continue to vamp until she gets here, and then we'll go through the agenda as fast as we can. As efficiently. I imagine we could take the executive officer's report.
As a
committee?
Yeah, we could do introductions.
Okay.
So, to make it official, we probably should do a roll call, note that we don't have a quorum, and then when we do that,
our fourth member call it a quorum.
So, good morning. Welcome to the B team at chair. They make sure that I have nothing really complicated when I'm here, so that's a good thing. So I would like to call the roll, and then I guess I can convene us as a committee to start the non-decision parts of the meeting.
Yes.
Okay. Can we have a roll call, please?
Board Member Johnny?
Here.
Board Member Kissinger?
Here.
Board Member Abayoga? Board Member Muller? Vice Chair McGrath?
Here.
So we do not have a quorum yet.
So we don't have a quorum, but we can start with introductions.
Well, initially, let me make an announcement. The building management has been advised by fire department that these tables are a hazard for exiting should there be an emergency. So I want to make sure that all attendees are aware that as part of any need to immediately exit, go to the side aisles to exit rather than through the center. So this was Angela made a negotiation yesterday that we could keep the tables here for this meeting. Next meeting, we may need to come up with some different plan for where
we'll
the tables
are. You have to have a break in the middle? Is that
the remains to be seen. Or we levitate them or whatever.
Forward,
yeah, we may be able to bring them forward. So we'll figure out something, but
then we can reach out and touch it.
Yeah. So. At any rate, with that as the introduction to the introductions, we do have a number of staff introductions. Let me start off with Stephen Hill, who's up front.
We have to turn this thing on. My name's Stephen Hill. I'm head of the Toxics Cleanup Division here at the board, and I'm very happy to introduce Ron Gullibo as our newest member of our division. Ron is a licensed geologist, professional geologist, who has worked in environmental consulting in the Bay Area since 1984. He has extensive experience with investigation and cleanup at a variety of contaminated sites, including several in our region. He's originally from Indiana and has degrees in geology and environmental science from Indiana University. For fun, he enjoys downhill skiing and multitasking with three teenagers. So we are thrilled to have Ron join us at the Water Board, and we'd like you to welcome him.
Thank you. Welcome.
Then I'd like Brian Thompson.
Hi. Please welcome Dr. Jack Craig back to the Water Boards in the enforcement section. He started at the Water Boards as an intern while working as a graduate student and getting his environmental engineering degree from UC Berkeley, studying dissolved metals and wastewater discharges to the bay. He then came on full-time working on the cleanup of Department of Defense facilities and working on the long-term management strategy for sediments and dredging. 14 years ago, he made a switch to the California Coastal Commission, where he's been managing the non-point source pollution program, frequently working with regional and state water board staff, protecting the coastal zones from development. Jack Gregg has built his career protecting water quality, and he has put that into practice. He likes to swim, sail, scuba dive, and share those activities with his four grandkids. I knew it wouldn't take him long to get his feet wet again, and he proved me right. Last week at our picnic, he was one of the staff who took my stand-up paddleboard for a ride on the bay. Welcome back, Jack.
Jack, welcome to the elite class of post-coasties.
Yes, I, Bill Johnson has multiple introductions.
Yeah, we actually have two new additions to the Watershed Division. First, we've got James Parrish.
I'm assuming NPDES, not Watershed.
Oh, wastewater. I'm sorry. Two new additions to the NPDES Wastewater Division. I don't know what happened. I go on vacation, and I don't know where I work anymore. We've got James Parrish, who's a new environmental scientist. He's been a scientific aide with us for about a year, and doing that, he was tracking our sanitary sewer overflow violations and compiling annual sanitary sewer overflow data for us, and he's looking forward to passing that work on to someone else. So that he can oversee some NPDES permit cases and write some NPDES permits, and actually he's going to take over our pollution prevention program as well. So recently, James finished his master's program in environmental management at the University of San Francisco, and he's happy to have his evenings and weekends free for a change. And to celebrate this newfound freedom, he recently went to Europe for a little trip where he learned to appreciate some of the smaller things in life, like a lunch in the park or a hot shower or a swim in the sea. And James is a very quick learner. For instance, in Barcelona, he learned to keep one eye on his clothing at all times while swimming. Of course, he learned this the hard way. So I'm sure he's going to have a much easier time of it here at the Water Board. So we also have Jessica Watkins, who's a water resource control engineer. She spent several years working on site assessments and remediation projects for Environ in Emeryville. Before that, she was also an intern here as she got her bachelor and master's degrees in civil and environmental engineering from UC Berkeley and Stanford University. Back then, she was with the groundwater division, and those folks have really great things to say about Jessica. So now she's going to be overseeing some NPDES cases, too, and that means also drafting some NPDES permits. And hopefully she'll still have some time for fun outside of work. She tells me that she enjoys playing league volleyball, playing easy nine-hole golf courses, and watching reality television. So she's going to be able to save up her intellectual skills for right here in the office. She also tells me that her favorite class at UC Berkeley was a math class. So she does have some intellect. It was called Advanced Scrabble Strategy, and she has memorized all 101 two-letter Scrabble words. So her first assignment at the Water Board is going to be writing a permit using only her two-letter Scrabble word vocabulary. So it's going to be much shorter and easier to get through than the two that are on your desk right now. So I'm just really happy to have both James and Jessica in the NPDES program. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Let the minutes show that Margaret's arrived and we are now constituted with a quorum.
Indeed.
I've been wanting to do that.
There you go. So, and for our final introduction, Diane will make the introduction.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm not going to be able to top that. Since Anne is on vacation today, I agreed to introduce Teresa Brechtel. She's the newest hire in our Management Services Division. You'll get to know Teresa because she'll be involved in helping us prepare for the board meetings, both the materials, sending the materials out, getting down here in the morning, helping us set up. If you need anything, certainly feel free to contact her.
Figuring out where the tables go.
Figure out where the tables go in our new arrangement.
challenge.
Teresa is actually a transfer from another state agency in Concord, Cal OSHA, so we're quite excited to have recruited her over. She's interested and excited about learning more about water quality, which is what's something we really promote for our Management Services Division, and so we're happy to have her on board.
Welcome.
As you can see, we've been doing a lot of hiring. Partially that's, or largely that's due to a number of retirements in the past 6 weeks or so. We've had Derek Whitworth and Kent Out retire, and also noting that Shinrei Lee, head of our Watershed Division, is essentially moving this week from our region to the North Coast region. So I've had discussions with executive officer up there and trying to get a player to be named later, but that hasn't been determined yet. So we'll keep you posted, but we hope to have further introductions coming in coming months.
Next on our agenda is public forum. I have no cards. It is not a highly controversial meeting, but if there's anybody that needs to speak but forgot to put in a card, run quickly to the podium. Too late.
That was efficient.
Oh, there is. I'm sorry. That's for the San Jose item. So next is the minutes. You have the minutes in your packet. Are there any corrections? Lacking any correction, can I have a motion to approve the minutes?
Second.
It's been moved by Commissioner Abikobi and approved by Bill Kissinger to approve them. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Approved by voice vote. Now, the chairman's board members and executive directors. Let's start on my left. Bill, what have you been up to?
What have I been up to? I wish I had some interesting stuff to say. I've been dealing with family things only, which I won't bore you or burden you with.
It's not necessarily the interest that you want.
No, exactly.
And on my right, Nusha?
Me too, actually. I have been dealing with a lot of family stuff. Nothing professional to report. So.
Margaret?
I apologize for being late. I had a late night last night with my city council meeting. We went till 12:30 and talking about our jobs and our increase in development and housing and the need for more housing. And we've had some discussion, a lot of discussion about whether to put housing out in what we call the North Bay Shore area, out in the by the bay, by where a lot of the companies are. But interestingly, I mean, folks have been asking about water quality. The wastewater treatment plant capacity issue came up last night. So water is definitely on folks' minds as we talk about these issues with land use. So. It's an interesting time, and a lot of debate will be ensuing, I'm sure, as we move forward and look at these big issues about how we grow and grow wisely.
So I have a much shorter report than the chair. There's two meetings I want to report on. On August 18th, Chair Young and I met with Save the Bay about not the upcoming permit, because we don't want to talk and can't talk about the upcoming stormwater permit, but about the status of compliance efforts and how they vary and how that is going to go before the board. We anticipate both a hearing and a workshop to try to make sure that there's an opportunity to discuss these things and have dialogue that involves the staff, the permittees, and the board, so that the board can give direction. Bruce can cover that and the status of that in his report. The other thing that I think is relevant to many of us is Monday's chair's call. I filled in for Terry on that, and there were chairs from most of the regional boards, as well as Fran and the executive officer of the state board. The main item of conversation was the upcoming water quality coordinating committee meeting on the 2nd, and there's a tour that's before that, so you need to kind of get your reservations. And it's a very good orientation. It's also good to get input and ideas from other board members about how they're handling things from the board's policy setting perspective at the different regions. It already paid off. I did get an email from Regional Board 9 about how they're approaching stormwater, and I sent that on to Bruce. So I think improving communication about how we approach these things is good for all of us, and there's at least one good dinner guaranteed. two other interesting items of interest. One is it's clear that apparently there's been an adjustment in the salary range for environmental scientists, which will increase their salary, perhaps not to what the engineers but approaching a better equity. So I think that's good news for our staff. It's going to increase the budget, but I think that's all been taken care of. So that's the first thing. my mind just went blank. Oh, the second thing has to do with this year's legislation. I think everybody knows that there's a water bond, and everybody knows that there's finally some groundwater legislation. That will be one of the subjects, but there were apparently at least three or four other pieces of significant legislation in the water quality arena. Tom indicated, it was the busiest year for the State Water Resources Control Board in policy issues in most of their memory. So we will have a chance to begin to look at what those authorities mean in terms of our workload and in terms of our responsibilities. So that concludes my report. Bruce.
I'll pick up on your last comment somewhat, partially because Tam couldn't be with us today, and she may have reported on some of this. The legislation, as you say, there's a number of pieces of legislation moving forward. End of August is essentially the date that it has to pass out of the legislature, and the governor has until the end of September to sign the bills on his desk. Not everything has been acted on at this point, but some of the significant ones include legislation mandating groundwater management plans. And essentially, the idea is that for priority watershed groundwater basins, the local agencies will be responsible for coming up with groundwater management plans by the end of 2016. If they do not, then the state board is mandated to develop those plans. One disconnect we see is that it sort of jumps from the local agencies to the state board and bypasses us. But hopefully in the ongoing dialogue of development of those plans, we'll be definitely plugged in. But another significant piece of legislation that ties to something we've been heavily involved in is a statewide ban on single-use bags. And we'll need to look at the details in that to see how that meshes with some of the local programs that are here in the Bay Area. But it should, by and large, be of help for our trash management plans when it's on a statewide basis. Other things I would have, channeling Tam here a little bit, would have expected her to bring us up to date on include that at the state board's meeting next week, actually 2 weeks from now, they will be considering statewide permits for small domestic wastewater treatment facilities. This is probably more significant for the Central Valley than for us, but we'll look at the opportunities to use that statewide permit where we can. Likewise, they're going to be considering a statewide permit on vaults, utility vaults, discharges from utility vaults. That's something that we historically have had a few. In other words, where you have collected water at the bottom of a vault in a building, frequently it does collect either materials from operation or sometimes from seepage of groundwater, and coming up with a statewide permit to address that discharge. One that has been delayed until October is a statewide permit on potable water discharge. We've been coordinating closely with State Board on this, and in fact had put out a draft of our own region-wide permit for potable water, but we've set that aside while the State Board's working on theirs. They've continued to get a lot of input around the state on this proposed permit and initially felt they could consider it at the second September meeting, and now they've bumped it a month to October. That isn't so significant that we're going to move forward and bring the regional permit for your consideration. We still think the State Board can pull this together. And, in fact, Tom and others on our staff have been working closely with the State Board to try to mesh the requirements in the statewide permit with what we had put out on the street. So we're getting to a good spot on that. In this month's report, I noted the Alameda County Safe Drug Disposal Rally. Typically this month we have, as part of our September meeting, what we call the Tang Chung Wu Pollution Prevention Award. We're going to do that in October, but I do want to call out, as I say, there's a not so lovely picture of me in there where I'm getting this commendation on behalf of the building, and just call attention to the fact that we do have disposal bin for prescriptions and other medicines just right out here, and that there is growing support for having this more broadly. I was interested to hear at the Safe Drug Disposal Rally that in Alameda County, essentially all these bins are on the west side of the county, that there's essentially no bins out in Livermore, Pleasanton area, and that's a big need. So they're trying to get that established. And as is typical, sometimes initiatives move forward with different priorities. Here, a big priority is proper handling and disposal of medications to ensure they're not falling into the hands of people who may be abusing them or misusing them. And the safe disposal sort of as backup then gets called out for its environmental benefits. But right now it seems the social benefits is taking front and center, which is fine. We're getting something done. I wanted to update you on a couple of projects last month. We had a lengthy workshop on the proposed flood control project for San Francisco Creek. Since that time, the public comment period has closed on the application. We've posted all letters, approximately 20 letters, and both based on the application we received July 31st, comments from the board and comments in the letters, we sent a letter to the Joint Powers Authority asking for further information to complete their application. We sent that out a week before last. Essentially, where we are overall in the project is that we still do not have the Army Corps having put out a public notice to define the quote-unquote project. While we're waiting for that, we are trying to get further information on both where the specific impacts are based on the new project design and where mitigation would be provided for those impacts. Under the basin plan, calling out the what's called the 404B1 guidelines, which is federal guidance, which has been incorporated into our basin plan over the last 25 years. First, the project is supposed to demonstrate how it avoids impacts, and then if it can't avoid all impacts, how it minimizes impacts, and then once you established how the impacts have been minimized, then what is the mitigation for that? We've wrestled quite a lot on trying to come up to the avoidance stage. We feel we're essentially, depending on how the Corps defines the project, in some understanding of the avoidance stage. Now we need to work through the mitigation stage of what we do for the minimized impact. So, again, we're essentially a bit ahead of the other agencies, but I think having held the workshop last month was very worthwhile because it also pushed the Joint Powers Authority to get its application together. Unfortunately, they only provided the material they provided to us at the end of July. They only provided that to the Corps about 2 weeks ago. So the Corps is now going through that material, and hopefully we'll very soon come up with a public notice.
This is, of course, a high-visibility project with politicians, and it's important to notice that the Corps of Engineers permitting process is, as they say, the tall pole in the tent at this time. One of the things that you may not all realize, but having done such permits, the Corps of Engineers must circulate for comments, and its general procedure is to ask the applicant to resolve any of those. So the comments that we heard from the environmental organizations, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the local environmental groups will come up again in that group. The fastest way through the permit process is for the applicant to directly resolve those with the applicant. So I want to make sure that you all know that. Ritual beating of the water board for delays is sometimes a contact sport, but the way the permit process actually works, the Corps of Engineers process is the one that determines the ultimate schedule.
And we've noted before that frequently it's because we respond and put issues out on the table, sort of first amongst the agencies, then we get the attention and potentially the pushback, but it doesn't mean that if the issues are resolved in our shop, that they're totally resolved for all agencies. So we try to do what we can to pull the other agencies along and to educate them what are the issues that need to be resolved.
So, Bruce, I have a question. I assume everybody who is trying to apply for a permit or approve a project, they sort of go do their research and figure out which agencies they need to deal with. But I wonder if there's a way we can sort of create some sort of like a flow chart or something that says, look, this is the process. You need to go through us, and then you need to go through this agency, this agency, this agency. And that way, like right up in the front, when they submit their application, we can send this to them and say, make sure you deal with these, or try to start communicating, or, you know, then we don't end up being, the way that this happened. Like, they thought we are the one who are stopping them, but, you know, maybe they should have started their application with other agencies earlier,
well,
or they should have talked to the core maybe earlier.
Right.
Or, you know,
there are a number of efforts to try to improve the permitting process. First, anytime there's a CEQA document, we try to make it clear, if we do have the opportunity to comment, what our concerns are, but also as much as possible point out concerns that may be those of other agencies, knowing that potentially we're overstepping, but we try to be clear on what those concerns may be and point out what the permitting process is. Sometimes we do see that the response then in the CEQA documents is basically to say that, okay, they need to get a permit from these agencies and those issues will be resolved in the permitting process, rather than to really spell out in the CEQA document what the resolution is. And then there is a sense that if an agency doesn't say there's a problem, that it's moving forwards on approval. We found that regularly with the federal agencies that that's not the case. And so San Francisco Creek Project is one where we have tried to make clear what our concerns are and try to pull in the other agencies to express their concerns. But by and large, we have been the only agency to put it in writing. And there's been this sense that if the other agencies haven't put it in writing, that everything's okay, when we talk to those people at the agencies and find they haven't even started their review.
And that's what I mean. Like, I wonder why they took them so long to submit their applications to the Corps. They could have probably done it 6 months ago. I wonder if it was lack of knowledge or it was like the fact that they didn't know they need to go. So I'm just trying to kind of get the burden off.
It's sometimes a mix, and that's our challenge, because it sometimes depends on the consultants. Sometimes the consultants know the process very well and can guide the process. Sometimes it's sort of selective listening.
Yeah, sure.
I think also what was helpful through the workshop process was we were able to get the attention of the National Marine Fisheries Service, who said, gee, we thought we assigned somebody to that project. Apparently we didn't, so I guess we have to do that. And so you did have someone from the National Marine Fisheries Service at our workshop saying these are the issues we're going to be looking at, but they have yet to put anything in writing, right. And they may be bringing up issues about the steelhead and other salmonids that we may not have addressed yet. And so there's that sort of thing that's still hanging out there. So we try to do our best pulling the agencies in, and that sometimes makes us the target for so doing. But in our mind, we're trying to reach resolution of the issues and move it along as much as possible. So it is a bit of a juggling act, and I end up calling either VCDC or CORE people to try to make sure they recognize the significance and the need to bring these projects along. Here's a case where it's certainly significant in terms of public infrastructure and public safety that this get moved along. And I don't think the other agencies are trying to hold it up. It's just that, much like us, they're challenged in being able to review all projects, but I think there's sometimes a sense that if we're working on it, they'll sort of say, okay, we'll see how far the water board gets in resolving these issues, and then we'll step in.
But no matter what, they need to go to those agencies anyway, right?
Yes.
It's not like we can.
And that's the challenge with this project is that I think there's the sense locally that as soon as we quote unquote approve it, it's ready to go.
Right.
But the fact that we are considering a quote unquote approval, in other words, the water quality certification. We only certify a project that the federal agency considers for permitting.
Right.
Until the federal agency, in this case the Corps, defines the project and puts out, as Jim says, their public notice of what the project is, we can't issue a certification because there, in effect, is no project to certify.
Right.
And so that's part of the challenge moving forward of trying to make sure both everyone understands the order, and we try to spell this out. The Corps, to their credit, commonly will hold interagency meetings before permitting starts to try to get proposed projects in, those proponents to come in, hear from all the agencies what the initial concerns are, to try to say this is what we would want to see in our application. We actually, in advance of the July 31st submittal, we put out a letter saying this is what we want to see in the application. Mm-hmm. The Joint Powers Authority folks told us we're not going to be able to give you everything by July 31st, what you've asked for, so we'll continue to get it to you, and they are continuing to do that. But it's sometimes frustrating, but it's just something that we have to keep pushing all the parties towards a resolution.
I guess one of the concerns that I have, and I think maybe it can be helpful for us as an agency, that we put so much effort and time into these things, and sometimes the sort of public perception is much different, especially in that case,
correct,
based on what I've
yeah.
heard from people. And I think it's partly because, I mean, San Francisco Creek Joint Power Authority is a very... it's a small sort of nonprofit, right? So I wonder, financially, they probably didn't have the, or maybe they did, I don't know, top-notch consultant who knows every single thing that they need to do before they make it to us, or before we can even do anything. Because they basically have told everybody that we are the one who are stopping them from moving forward, which, based on what I hear from you, is that we can't even do anything unless they have a permit from the federal agencies.
Application from,
right.
from the court.
So I wonder, if there's a way to, help them instead of, building a case that we are the one who are stopping them, guiding them through the process and say, look, go show your project to this and this and this. Not just show it, just start applying for permits
right.
and stuff like that before you get it to us. And these are the concerns that they may have, but...
We do try to express this and put both the issues but the need to get the other agencies
to follow that up, Bruce.
Did
the district go to any of the interagency agreements? The Corps has those almost monthly, or they do if there's
correct.
A workload.
Yeah.
And you can get feedback from the agencies before you've even completely tasked the consultants to do the environmental work.
Right.
You can get the direct input in terms of what the agencies are going to need to get a permit. And, one of the things that I want to make sure everybody understands, the regional board's 401 certification is part of the federal process, and the Corps is the lead. So we are – it's the most efficient way to get, I think, feedback or permits from us, but it's part of the federal process. So we can't galvanize the public process.
Right. And that's what I say. We, as much as we can, try to push it along, especially recognizing that when we put something in writing, hopefully that then becomes a laundry list that the project proponent can give to the consultant to say, here's what we need to do. It is frustrating when we have that list and we don't always get the list completed. And that's where some of the back and forth goes. But it also speaks to the need that a project needs to have a consultant who is going to work through, and if they find something they don't understand, ask questions
right.
rather than just submit
when
something that's
yeah.
incomplete. And that's it's a challenge, and I've spoken to a number of the principals on the Joint Powers Authority saying, look, remember you're dealing with us on our permitting, but you need to be contacting the Corps to
right.
help push them along. We'll do what we can.
Right.
So It is sometimes seems like it's a very slow-moving process, but it's trying to align it in such a way that we can reach resolution and move forward.
So just to follow up, I guess I have a couple different thoughts. There was a surreal quality about that session where, there was a plea being made to us to act so things could move forward.
Right, exactly.
Our acting wasn't going to, in and of itself, move anything forward. Right. On the other hand, it's a reasonable point that, the federal government, it's a federal permit, we're just doing a water quality certification, but we, under the law, can specify pretty much anything we want to, and under the program, the federal government has to take it. So, we are acting quite substantively, but procedurally, it was out of step. It was premature for us to be blessing a project that, as you say, wasn't adequately described. I wonder, though, you've mentioned you sometimes informally call up your counterpart at the Corps to make sure that things are going along. Is there a regular set of interagency meetings that happen on the executive director level or assistant executive director level where these kinds of things can be headed off so that you don't have a whole community here thinking that they're about to, triumph when they're not even getting close to the finish line?
Right, and there's not a formal broad process for doing that. There's a little bit narrower through the long-term management strategy, where we do is have executive management committee that includes me, Larry Goldspan, head of BCDC, the colonel, whoever's the colonel at the time, and then the head of the wetland program at US EPA. And so having those meetings on a regular basis, which are focused more on dredging activities, we still at times bring up other projects. And this was one I directly sent a message out some months ago saying, I've sent out a letter, that describes this is what they need to do. You're going to be hearing about this. Right. And they have heard about it, but it's still the need to get that word and get the parties moving forward. Here, the challenge from what we can tell is that the need for a joint powers authority shows that this is not a typical project hierarchy. In other words, the project basically is being done right on the county line, and so you're trying to get...
There was nothing exotic about... it's a JPA, but there was nothing exotic about this. The water quality certification is,
shouldn't be
fare.
So exotic. It's just that this is the culmination of many years of some local gamemanship.
Mm-hmm.
And to a certain degree, I think the locals feel, we've figured out how we're going to do this.
Right.
Now why haven't all the other agencies figured out? And so it's sort of, I think, a frustration saying that we've reached resolution, we've established the joint powers agreement, we've been able to figure out how much of the golf course is given up, because I'm sure there's big negotiations on that. Mm-hmm. And then to have the state and federal agencies say, remember us, that's understandably frustrating for the locals, but it is a step that needs to be incorporated. We found it frustrating that we read some of the minutes of the JPA meeting when it was reported that all the agencies were close to permitting, and we wrote a letter literally a year ago saying, no, we're not close to permitting, we still have all these issues. And we've continued to get this message saying, well, then that means you're holding us up if you're not ready to permit. So it hasn't been only this project, but it typically the larger, either the more significant in terms of the infrastructure or sometimes the development. We had some of this same issue that Jim will recall on the proposal for a Walmart in Sassoon City 3 or 4 years ago, and that in the same way where we were trying to get through the project design and the mitigation, and the city manager for Sassoon City said, we need this project or we're going to go bankrupt, and basically went to the governor's office to tell us to permit. And we said, we don't have everything we need to be able to permit. And so there are things we do to try to pull these along, but they're not always cleanest. That's also why, as part of our workshop, we did have Shinrei make the presentation about the Belmont Creek, where we seem to have good workings with all of the stakeholders to come up with a project selection and then moving forward for a project application. And there is a way forward, an improved way forward, but it has to be not only the state and federal agencies working together. The local agencies have to recognize that they need to be working with the state and federal agencies.
But what I hear you saying, though, is that greater or more formal interactions with the other agencies and federal agencies in particular isn't really necessary or wouldn't change.
It starts at the level of having the interagency meetings, as Jim refers to, and trying to ensure that projects get on that list so we can talk about them. Sometimes we do recognize that projects, even outside of that, are worth having agency meetings on. So our staff will make calls to the various resource and regulatory agencies, say, look, this is a big one. Let's make sure we're on the same page.
But at the end of the day, there's no effective substitute for really good project management.
Yes.
In terms of understanding how the procedure is going to unfold over time and how you nest the different activity levels right. together as efficiently as you can and make sure that you've got people working on issue resolution. Rest assured, I like to finish this on a kind of a happy note or a more positive note. It doesn't just occur here. I heard a report
it's
in the chair's call.
It doesn't happen here.
Misery loves company, though, it sounds like.
If you think it's bad here.
Let me finish the story. In the Central Coast, the regional board now has a number of staff people working with the Cambria Community Service District, which doesn't have the capacity in terms of understanding. Cambria is a small community in San Luis Obispo County, if I remember correctly, that it gets its water from a confined creek to the north, San Simeon Creek, which also comes out of a very famous state park. So there's not enough water in wet years to fill all the lots in Cambria, which is why I remember it so well. But in a dry year, they are almost out of water. And water is essential to public health. So they have a small desalinization plant that they need to work through the permit process. And we do have some experience with that. But again, further dewatering or modifications to San Simeon Creek with a steelhead run, you know the issues. What to do with the brine? Where are you going to put it? How do you get permits through the Coastal Commission? So the regional board, I think, can help in these things, and I think we are. I think we just need to make sure that people are educated as to how far we're going in some cases.
And that's why I was sort of talking about, I don't know, it was engineering me. A flow chart or something that says, this is the process, and this is yours, and you need to deal with this.
It's the project management in me.
Right. And then, you know, just you know, that way you when they go to the governor or when they go around and give all these presentations that water board is not letting this project move forward, then you can always look back and say, look, we gave you this. And you know you should have dealt with this. And we were just trying to help you. But
we'll,
you know,
we'll make sure that Bruce has his sunglasses off when they take pictures of him when this thing finally
right.
occurs. Bruce, did you have more on your report?
Just briefly, another update on a project that's been of interest to the board is the Leona Heights sulfur mine, mm-hmm. The remediation. And progress is being made on that project. All the agencies were able to get their permits together, which is a good thing. They're finding that it's a little bit slower going than expected, and our requirements said that they would be required to be complete by October 15th. It does not look like they will meet that. They've asked for an extension through Diane and the cleanup team. They've given me a recommendation that we extend the work windows from October 15th to November 30th. And I think that's reasonable as long as they're using the best management practices during their work to ensure that there isn't discharge. Here again is a case, though, that we're going to have to work with the other agencies who've provided various levels of approvals to ensure that they will give the same allowance. I think it's something that definitely is worthwhile. We'd like to see the project essentially complete and not having to close it up over the if it is a wet season, through the the winter. So this, again, is an opportunity but a challenge for us to work with the other agencies. But we'll keep you posted on this. It's heartening as some of you have been out to the site, see that progress is being made after all these years, and we don't want to slow that down, but they're finding it's a little more significant than expected. So we'll keep you posted on that. Finally, I'll just note that, as we've reported, we will plan our annual discussion of the board's priorities at the October meeting. And so we will be getting those the draft materials out to you within the next 10 days, and certainly have those in your hand before the WQCC. So we'll be able then to discuss in full at October.
Great.
And I will leave it at that.
Any questions?
No.
So we now come to the time when the chair reads the. We need to make sure that everybody is sworn. So on our proceedings, the way we do it here, all relevant evidence that any person desires to be considered by this board must be introduced at this hearing, first by the board staff, second by the discharger, third by public agencies, and fourth by any other interested parties. The board and the board council may ask questions to clarify the testimony of any witness at any time. Cross-examination of any witnesses by others will be allowed. Following completion of direct testimony by all persons, each person testifying. I put the period in the wrong place. Let me redo that. Cross-examination of any witness by others will be allowed following completion of direct testimony by all persons. Each person testifying will commence by stating his or her name, whom he or she represents, and whether he or she took the oath to tell the truth. The hearings will not be conducted according to technical rules of evidence. The board will accept any evidence or testimony that is reasonably relevant to the issue. All board files, exhibits, and agenda materials pertaining to this matter will be made part of the record of this proceeding. Additional written material will be made part of the record at the discretion of the board. Those wishing to testify in the hearing will now raise their hand or rise. Do you promise to tell the truth?
So do.
Thank you. It's hard to read that.
Uncontested calendar, item 5, includes 2 items. And I'm not aware of any cards you have for either of these items. I do recommend for item 5A, we noticed that our reference in finding 4, whereas 4, the CEQA exemption is for adoption of orders, not for rescission of orders. Mm-hmm. So our eagle-eyed attorneys have noticed this, and so I want to read into the record what we will recommend modifying finding 4 on that. It should read, pursuant to Water Code Section 15061B3, this rescission is exempt from the California Environmental Quality Act because it will not have the potential for causing a significant effect on the environment because it will result in a cessation of discharges authorized by the VOC general permit. And so we would essentially revise this number 4 to include that finding. I will note just before making the recommendation here that while this rescission is short, only one page, that it is very significant in that it brings to conclusion, not complete conclusion, but it wraps up a chapter in our 30-year history of cleaning up sites, of that essentially one of our challenges we faced in the 80s was the need to, as we extracted polluted groundwater as part of cleanup, what to do with that. And so initially that was discharged to the wastewater treatment system. Some of the folks representing entities in this room correctly pointed out that that was an inefficient use of capacity. And we recommended to the board in 1998 that it adopt a policy whereby First, you look at reusing that water. Then you look at discharging it to the sanitary sewer. If those were infeasible, then you could apply for a permit. So initially, there were up to 90 individual permits. Then in 1994, we adopted the first stage of this general permit. And for many years, there were about 100 cleanup sites covered under this. That over the years now has dropped, and the few remaining are able to be put into the combined fuel VOC general permit. And so the need for this permit no longer exists, where 20, 25 years ago it was one of the most significant things we were working on. So I think that demonstrates, you know, the progress we're doing in our cleanup oversight. So with that, I would recommend adoption of both items on the uncontested calendar with the change to finding 4 on item 5A that I read.
I have no cards. Are there any questions of the staff? Can I have a recommendation to approve the uncontested calendar?
I move that they be approved.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Board Member Kissinger and seconded by Board Member Anacoba. I got two commissions that I sit on, so I mix them up. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered.
I'll just say, as an aside, having worked on a lot of those sites over the years, it's amazing to see this waste discharge requirement go away. So.
The sites may not be fully gone away.
but it was such a giant effort at one time.
But yeah. the level of progress is indeed significant.
Yeah.
This brings us to the two discharges in the South Bay, the non-consent calendar parts of our. My understanding is we're going to have a presentation on both of them and an opportunity to discuss them individually, but vote on them separately. Is that correct?
Right. While we make a joint presentation, we need to vote on them separately. So I'd like Marsha Lau to make the staff presentation.
Hello, well, Vice Chair McGrath and board members. My name is Marsha Lau, and I work for the NPDES Wastewater Division. Today, we have tentative orders that would reissue the NPDES permit for two wastewater treatment facilities. One is the San Jose Santa Clara Regional Wastewater Facility, and the other is Sunnyvale Water Pollution Control Plant. As this slide shows, San Jose Santa Clara and Sunnyvale both discharge to Lower South Bay, south of the Dumbarton Bridge. Together with Palo Alto, these three South Bay wastewater treatment facilities provide services to almost 1.8 million people, which is about a quarter of the entire Bay Area population. You reissued Palo Alto's permit about 3 months ago in June, and today for your consideration are these two other South Bay facilities. The lower South San Francisco Bay, as this slide shows, is surrounded by extensive network of mud flats, sloughs, salt ponds, and marshes. in this area, the bay is confined and very shallow. So over the years, permitting these three facilities has often been a challenge. And nowadays, all these three facilities, they are using advanced secondary treatment technology that remove more biochemical oxygen demand and total suspended solids than the federal secondary treatment standards require. And all three facilities also recycle wastewater to reduce their total discharge volumes. San Jose Santa Clara facility is the largest publicly owned treatment works in our region, serving approximately 1.4 million people. The city of San Jose operates the treatment plant, and the treatment plant is co-owned by the city of San Jose and the city of Santa Clara. But as far as the collection system goes, each of the city independently owns and operates its own collection systems. And not surprisingly, the larger collection system, more than 2,200 miles, is in San Jose. You may have noticed that in response to the chair's request, we have added a text to the tentative order that describes the state of the collection systems and also their compliance status. We intended to describe the states of the collection systems in all future tentative orders. San Jose Santa Clara treatment plant has a design treatment capacity of up to 167 million gallons. It discharges to artesian slough, average about 90 million gallons a day. It discharges into artesian slough, which flows into the Coyote Creek and then out to the bay. The revised tentative order would continue the restriction on San Jose's discharge volume that was put in place years ago to protect nearby salt marsh habitats. With the annual average discharge at only 90 million gallons a day, the threat of conversion of salt marsh to brackish marsh is much less now. This is in large part due to San Jose's wastewater recycling efforts. Sunnyvale, in comparison, is a smaller facility. It provides services to about 146,000 people in the Sunnyvale area. The plant has a treatment capacity of less than 30 million gallons a day. The treated effluent is discharged to Moffitt Channel and then flows into Guadalupe Slough and then out to the bay. Sunnyvale provides advanced secondary treatment by routing the primary treated wastewater through two large, about 400 acres, and these are shallow and large ponds, before routing it back to the main plant for further treatment. This type of operation using shallow ponds for aeration that occurs naturally is rare in our heavily urban Bay Area. We made a number of revisions to the tentative orders, such as clarifying our expectations for chlorine residual reporting. We did it in such a way as to avoid providing a disincentive for continuous chlorine monitoring. And we are happy to present these two tentative orders for you, to you for your consideration. I'm not going to join my team, and we are happy to answer any of the questions you may have.
Any questions? That completes the staff presentation. No questions? We do have two cards. If there's no objection, we'll go ahead and hear from both of those. First, we have James Irvin from San Jose.
Good morning, Vice Chair McGrath and members of the board. I'm Jim Irvin, the program manager for the San Jose Santa Clara wastewater facility for MPDS compliance. I'm joined today by our Director of Environmental Services, Carrie Romanaugh, our Deputy Director of the Wastewater Treatment Plant, Joanna DeSaw, and Eric Dunleavy. He's the supervisor of the biologists that monitor the water quality in our receiving water. San Jose is not contesting our permit today, but we did want to make a comment. Staff on the water board staff worked with us on a couple of technical issues. We had one third comment, though, the most significant to us, and that was that we continue to not be granted a finding of net environmental benefit. And we wanted to talk about that, but we're not contesting the permit. As Marsha Lau pointed out, and I should thank Marsha Lau, Derek Whitworth, Bill Johnson, Lila Tang, members of the staff that worked with us. We had an ongoing dialogue as the permit was being developed. Nothing controversial. As Marsha Lau pointed out, we are the largest wastewater treatment plant in the San Francisco Bay, serving 1.4 million residents, over 17,000 commercial industrial facilities. The majority of Silicon Valley flows through our plant. We serve the cities of San Jose, Santa Clara, Milpitas, Cupertino, Los Gatos, Saratoga, Monte Sereno, and a couple of small county sewer districts as well. And we discharge into that tiny little ribbon of slough called Artesian Slough and out into Coyote Creek in the lower South Bay. This receiving water has been designated as a sensitive habitat. It's certainly a shallow habitat. And when you consider 1.4 million people discharging their waste through it, it's actually forced our plant to make improvements and upgrades beyond what's normally expected in San Francisco Bay. And as Marsha also pointed out, I use the same slide, Lower South Bay is a very restricted area of the bay with 1.8 million people discharging. It's a remarkable achievement of human technology that you can have such a huge population discharging into such a small waterway. And, in fact, all three of our wastewater treatment plants for Palo Alto, Sunnyvale, and San Jose upgraded to advanced treatment specifically for this reason. In 1979, 1980, all three went to nitrification and filtration, which is what we're calling the advanced treatment. And this is the tiny little waterway artesian slough that we discharged through. I've been working for San Jose, the Water Pollution Control Plant, for 22 years. When I first came here back in the early 90s, we had this isolated little teeny habitat for black crowned night herons right in the middle of the slough. It was the rookery, and we had to avoid that area in the winter and different things. And it was always kind of remarkable because it was like the only rookery for miles around. It continues to be habitat, but a lot of the huge density of herons moved away back in the late 90s because other habitat opened up. It was actually a good story. But the amazing thing was that, the fact that we were the only habitat in town for a long time. And we sustain beneficial uses. These are listed in our permit. They come from the basin plan, of course. Six beneficial uses having to do with habitat for wildlife in different aspects, and three of those for human use, the non-contact recreation, contact recreation, commercial sport fishing. Again, just remarkable that we sustain any beneficial uses considering the type of use that the slough gets. And it always hasn't always been a good story. This is showing a photo of our facility when it was a little teeny sewer plant on the edge of the bay back in constructed in 1956. The first full year of operation was 1957. And we have data going back all the way. But When you look at biochemical oxygen demand to total suspended solids, it was 40 times higher than it is today. This is what you get for your money when you buy a state-of-the-art sewer treatment plant. In fact, they value our plant today at $2.2 billion. Nobody knows for sure the exact dollar amount. But, you know, I can proudly go to any ratepayers and say, this is what you get. You know, if I went back, if I could make this a scratch-and-sniff presentation, that would have smelled absolutely horrible. The dissolved oxygen
the first in part of it would chase us out of here.
I believe it would. And the other remarkable thing was that Milpitas had its own little teeny sewer plant, which was primary only, and that was discharging into Coyote Creek. And the little town of Alviso also had its own little sewage discharge location. So we're actually serving an even bigger amount of the community than this even indicates. One quarter of the population back then and discharging a huge amount more load to the bay. People think of the good old days, and it wasn't all that good, really. It was a lot more rural, but it wasn't that good. And why did it get better? You know, it's a rhetorical question. I think we all know the answer. It was because of decades of improvement of our sewer plant. And this is showing the four, what we call the four different treatment eras. We added secondary treatment in 1964. February 1979, the advanced tertiary filtration and nitrification went online, and you immediately saw a difference. And then 1997-98, we kicked it up a notch, went to biological nutrient removal. It's an interesting story behind that, but I won't bore you with the details. Didn't have any really regulatory reason to do that, but we just wanted to do it. And this is showing what the performance in stepwise, again, the total suspended solids biochemical oxygen demand. Going to secondary in 1964 reduced the total suspended solids by 44%, biochemical oxygen demand by 80%. And then when we went to advanced tertiary in 1979, both of those two pollutants went down by 97%. That was the status through the 1980s. By 1988, this water board, you folks or your predecessors, determined that our facility was providing a net environmental benefit to the bay due to oxygenation and flushing of our effluent. But the state board came back and remanded that and said they had three concerns in 1990, and this was in state board order WQ90-5. It's discussed in the fact sheet of our permit, and it still has implications for our permit today. And those three major concerns were the load of nutrients that we were discharging into the bay, the concentrations and loads of metals, particularly the copper and nickel, having an adverse, possibly, potentially an adverse impact on aquatic life. And number three, and most important, that the sheer volume of freshwater we were discharging was having the impact of converting salt marsh to freshwater marsh, and the saltwater marsh being habitat for rare and endangered salt marsh harvest mouse and California clapper rail. So we think we addressed all three of these issues. In fact, we issued a rather lengthy technical memorandum with the reissuance of our permit 5 years ago, going through these, and it's still true today, that as a result of going to biological nutrient removal in 1997-98, we reduced the nitrogen, and the main form being nitrate, reduced by 45%, and then the phosphorus even more went down almost 80%, largely because of biological nutrient removal, but partly also because phosphates have been banned or reduced in laundry detergents and such. And then for the metals issue, we also see the same sort of really heartening results. Metals have been going down for decades since we started collecting data in 1975. Some of that was due to the addition of filtration facilities in 1979. BNR didn't do much to that, but the vast majority of the metals reduction is because of industrial waste regulations, source control inspectors going out and monitoring industrial waste, pollution prevention programs, and just changes in the economy. But you can see for all nine metals shown here, I'm showing them broken down by higher concentration metals, lower concentration metals, chromium, copper, mercury, zinc, lead, silver, arsenic, cadmium, nickel, they've all dropped. None of them have gone up. Metals load is tremendously lower, and this has an impact more on the benthic community, the critters that live in the mud out in the bay. And this would be a common story for almost any treatment plant around the Bay Area, because that had to do with the economy. And the third issue in 1990 was salt marsh and the disappearance, or the fear that there was disappearing salt marsh. And as a result of that concern, the San Jose Regional Wastewater Facility, we contracted with H.T. Harvey Associates starting in 1989 through 2012 for 23 years. Not every single year, it was 17 surveys total, but they did surveys by aerial photography or satellite photography and mapped out the amount of salt marsh plants versus brackish plants versus fresh plants. In 30 different segments, 26 of them were study area, and four of those were reference reach. And this is showing the final results of the last survey they performed for us in 2012. Basically, salt marsh grew in all but four of the 30 studied segments. And of all the salt marsh that grew, most of it was, marsh grew, and then most of that was salt marsh. 470 acres more salt marsh just within the little ribbon around the fringes of Coyote Creek and Artesian Slough. And you can see that salt marsh forms basically immediately outside of Artesian Slough. So the influence of our freshwater discharge is not really that, does not extend that far out into the bay. And I could stop here. And in fact, 4 or 5 years ago, we did stop here and just said, okay, you know, we've met all the requirements. We should be net environmental benefit now. But I'll go further and say that the news even gets better than that. The Salt Marsh Restoration Project is restoring ponds, former salt ponds, in the immediate vicinity of our discharge and further out in the lower South Bay. 850 of the 1,225 acres that are now open for circulation and restoration, 850 acres of that is immediately within the influence of our discharge. And in fact, this is the dilution study we performed or we contracted for in 2013 to show, basically to update how much of our wastewater is out in the bay. Basically, Artesian Slough out to the confluence of Coyote Creek is on average 50% wastewater, and going upstream, downstream 1 mile is about 30%. So these ponds, at least four of the five, and really all five, are taking in roughly 30% of our wastewater and circulating and providing habitat. And what happens when you add our effluent plus former salt ponds, you get a fish buffet. And I'll go a little bit more into methodology, how this gets determined. But basically, the shrimp and the clams and the crabs and all the critters flourish in this newly opened salt pond. But it's also been the same story in Artesian Slough for years. And particularly, one of the important features in this is that you get a size of food for every kind of fish, and particularly the mysids that bloom in these ponds is a critical feature. I won't go into too much detail, but just to say that we got a graphic illustration of that. Yeah, this is a schematic diagram of the food web in action. Fish and Wildlife Service opened, in fact, all of these ponds in 2005, but A16-17 were opened in 2005, but then shut down for re-engineering in 2012. Fish and Wildlife Service cut them off for circulation, drained them dry, bulldozed them around, and then reopened them in March 2013. By May, we were noticing that we had more fishermen in Artesian Slough than normal. Usually you'd see a guy fishing or a couple of guys fishing every couple times a week. We were seeing somebody there every single day. And we quickly were able to attribute that to the fact that we had massive numbers of bass showing up, and the bass were eating the little fish, and the little fish were eating the mysids, tiny little shrimp-like creatures that were blooming in pond A16. A16 discharges into the lower part of Artesian Slough, so basically we were getting shrimp gumbo pumped into Artesian Slough, and that was feeding the chain. And, you know, when you get a lot of tiny fish, of course, you get a bird buffet, and researchers, and I should say Audubon Society, doing bird counts and such, and other researchers that are doing work for the Salt Pond Restoration Project are seeing large numbers, increasing numbers of waterfowl, migrating waterfowl, and just regular shorebirds and such, and much of that in and around the area of Artesian Slough. So we got really interested in this a few years ago. We noted that the UC Davis crew, Dr. Jim Hobbs, shown in the photo, I guess on the right-hand side, is the principal investigator. They've been going out into Artesian Slough and into these same ponds that I showed roughly every month or every other month, and we started to tie into that. I first caught on to it a few years ago at a presentation. they're doing trawls, otter trawls, right in our slough. It's like, well, I got to know more about this. And so we started partnering with them and letting them use our boat dock and that kind of thing. And then they also do beach seines. This is more recent work. This has to do with studying mercury in small fish to see how much mercury is bioaccumulating. It has to do with the pond A8 restoration. And they're using our artesian slough as one of their reference locations to catch tiny fish and measure amounts of mercury. Our interest is mainly just how many tiny fish they're catching in our artesian slough. This is 300 feet from the outfall where our water, you can see the ripples in the water in a couple of the photos. That's our effluent rushing out into the bay at low tide and catching thousands of fish. On one really dramatic example, that was in June, 7,633 fish in that net. You know, try imagine jamming that many little fish in that net. Every one of those little fish is trying to keep out of the net. You know, how many did they miss? Anyway, boggled my mind when I saw that. So now every time they go out there, we go out there to take pictures because it's really cool. And the otter trawls out in the channel is the more relevant measurement of what our beneficial uses would be. This is showing results, fish diversity in the winter. Good healthy diversity of fish, characterized, to my mind anyway, mostly by the large numbers of staghorn sculpin. They pull up these little guys, they fatten up in the winter and then make their way out in the ocean if they survive. A demonstration of at least cold freshwater habitats being sustained, if not enhanced. And these are relatively salty water fish, but they do come up in the freshwater at certain stages of their life. I don't know why, they just like to. But the other one, the longfin smelt circled at the lower corner, is significant because it is a state endangered species, not federal, and it's a concern. It's been in decline in the Delta. We find it every winter, find some numbers of those in artesian slough, and at that stage of their life, they are seeking fresh water. So if I'm not discharging, longfin smelt isn't coming there, which I think generally would be, I would call it an enhancement of rare and endangered species habitat. And summertime, slightly different assemblage of fish characterized mostly by northern anchovies arriving. A warm freshwater habitat. In fact, in the warm season, I'm much more confident in saying that the freshwater that we discharge and the flushing and the oxygenation is helping the fish community out in the slough. And incidental with the otter trawls, you always catch any time of year some type of baby fish or fish with eggs, showing some baby gobies, baby shiner surf perch. It's a live-bearing fish. That one was just a couple of days old when we caught it. And inland silverside with eggs. You know, clear demonstration that fish spawning is happening in an artesian slough and is probably augmented by our wastewater discharge. And lots of other critters. You know, this is a complex ecosystem, so you'd expect to find clams and crabs and worms and of course, the mysids. And when you get all that kind of diversity and food, productivity, you get lots of birds, which is overall enhancement of wildlife habitat. And when you get a lot of fish and birds, what do you get? People hunting and fishing. And all these photos were taken in artesian slough at different times. There are times in spring, I think, where we have fishermen in the slough every freaking day. And that's Rec 1, water contact recreation and commercial sport fishing. We're also one of several wastewater treatment plants in the Bay Area that has become a tourist destination. People actually go to our effluent. Can you imagine that happening 50 years ago? People go there because it's attractive, because it actually grows the freshwater plants, and there's lots of birds and things, and it's really cool. We have the Don Edwards National Wildlife Refuge Center, the Alviso Education Center, is right where our outfall. If you go to the eastern corner of the parking lot and look down, there's our outfall dropping into the bay. And they've opened up a new trail, the Mallard Slough Trail, that runs right alongside our effluent channel. And so we get a lot of hiking, sightseeing, birding. Any day of the year, you'll find at least a few people, usually more in the morning than in the afternoons, walking around looking at the view. And that's enhancement of non-contact water recreation. So, you know, it's a rhetorical question. You know, is San Jose sustaining beneficial uses in artesian slough? And of course, it's yes.
Mr. Irvin, we've let you go on. It is amazing to hear the manager of a sewage treatment plant as conversant in biology. Though I must, it's a very pleasant thing.
Can I be cross examined now? No, that's okay. that's really all I had.
Do we have any questions of Mr. Irvin?
Well, I want to thank you for the presentation. It's fascinating. I think it's remarkable that you can have essentially a river with 90 million gallons a day flowing fresh water and seemingly not impacting the water quality.
Making it better, I think. Yeah.
That's all I hear. Very impressive. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is Melody Tovar.
Actually, since she's speaking on Sunnyvale and that last presentation was on San Jose, I'd recommend that we consider the permit for San Jose.
Okay, you didn't want to have the joint.
And then
that's fine.
Speak on Sunnyvale.
So are there any other – I have no other cards from anybody who wants to speak on San Jose alone. Questions of the staff, or should we have a staff recommendation?
I guess I wouldn't mind hearing, just to follow on Mr. Irvin's presentation, I understand from the materials the legal standard, but I guess I'd like to hear a little bit more about why net environmental benefit is not an appropriate finding to be made here.
Well, I think it's appropriate to note, much like we did with the rescission order we just considered, that there's actually quite a lot of history here, and back 40 years ago, this board was essentially pushing San Jose, Sunnyvale, Palo Alto to consolidate their discharge and put it in an effluent pipeline north of the Dumbarton Bridge. That would have been expensive to do. The dischargers said, before we go to that, let's further study the impacts and be allowed a chance to demonstrate that our discharges are not causing the impacts you expect. And so there's been a lot of effort. It certainly hit a significant point in 1990 when, in response to this board's reissuance of the orders, State Board did issue its order that Jim Irvin referred to and that we include in a discussion of in attachment I in these orders, and basically was saying, no, this is not a net environmental benefit. In fact, there are impacts that these discharges are causing, specifically the freshwater conversion of salt marsh from San Jose. And I would say now over 25 years, we've been able to San Jose has continued to improve the quality of its discharge, and as you saw, that now we can essentially say that a nearshore discharge, when it's appropriately controlled and treated, is not having impacts that we thought we were seeing 30, 40 years ago. When I first started with this board in the late 70s, it seemed each year we had San Jose would have an upset and cause a fish kill. Obviously, we're a long way from that, and we're pleased we're from that. So I think there's no question that the quality of the discharge that this board is required through its effluent limitations has significantly improved. I think that's different from saying, though, that if the discharge was not there, would there be something totally different. That we would say, especially when you put in the ongoing restoration of the salt ponds, I think there's a lot of ongoing questions about how the system in the South Bay really functions. Certainly it seems to be functioning much better than it did 30 or 40 years ago. And we also note that the quantity of treated flow has decreased, as Marcia noted, that it's now down at San Jose about under 90 million gallons a day. When many of these issues were under discussion, the discharge was around 120 to 125 million gallons a day. So that's significant. There's continued recycling, which is decreasing the flow. Actually, one of the significant sources of and challenges for San Jose historically was the fact that they had a lot of canneries that, especially during the summer months, discharged, and that in many cases was the source of the upsets they had at the plant. Those canneries are now gone. We obviously have much more of the quote-unquote Silicon Valley types of industry, which not only are discharging much cleaner effluent or influent to the plant, but are then the clients in effect for reuse. I would say that one of the concerns I have by trying to go all the way to the point of saying that we would memorialize this as a net environmental benefit is that that almost implies then you need to preserve that discharge as is to ensure that you maintain that net environmental benefit. I think that is limiting in many respects, especially San Jose is considering, since it owns pond A18, whether there's an opportunity to use their effluent in that pond and potentially change the discharge. And so as we look more around the bay at the opportunities to do more nearshore discharge and include discharge to wetlands, I think we have to be careful not to paint ourselves into a certain perspective. Essentially, 40 years ago, we put a lot of effort into saying that wastewater needs to be, you know, gotten rid of as quick as possible, put it in deep water, get it out of here, and we're much more recognizing the potential benefits, not only for reuse, but for nearshore freshening for what you're seeing on the screen. So I think we want to be careful on trying to set up something legally that limits our ability to come up with technical solutions or enhancements as we move forward.
Great. Thank you.
Other questions or comments?
Actually, I had the same question that Bill had, but I also want to ask you, actually, why do you want to have the net benefits? So I guess the other side of this discussion.
Yeah, I want to be flip and just say, because we care. But it's kind of a badge of honor. We work for Mayor of San Jose is a green mayor and a green city. And you know, if you have, you know, this huge treatment plant, the biggest one in the San Francisco Bay, it really is just an emotional thing. It has no regulatory significance. It's, Carrie will talk.
Hi, Carrie Romano, Director of Environmental Services for the City of San Jose. As Jim mentioned, we feel very strongly that we are an asset to our community. We not only are working on improving our discharge, which improves the aquatic habitat, we're also working to improve our land habitat. We have a strong partnership with Audubon Society, and we have quadrupled the burrowing owl population on our lands, and we continue to make investments in that regard. We really want our community to feel proud of the work that they funded and the work that they continue to fund. And we do believe very strongly that we're different. We're different from the other dischargers in the Bay Area. We do things proactively, as Jim mentioned in his presentation, and we want support to continue to do that. And then, as Jim also mentioned, we are incredibly proud of the work we do, as is our staff. We believe we're a world-class utility, and I'd like my staff to continue to feel proud in that.
So, Bruce, can you give us a recommendation?
Yes. I also note that certainly we recognize that San Jose has been proactive. This board actually recognized the efforts from San Jose when they had their 50th celebration of the 50 years of their wastewater treatment facility, and this board issued a resolution recognizing that. So I think we're pleased with the work that San Jose has done over the years. With that, I do recommend adoption of the permit you have before you. We do not have any supplemental or recommended changes, so I recommend the revised tentative order that's before you.
Can I have a motion?
Motion to approve.
I second that.
Any comments? I do have a comment, but I want to make sure everybody else has a comment opportunity first.
No comment.
I'm going to show you a lot of love, maybe not as much love as you want, but I'm going to show you a lot of love. For somebody who's been in the water quality business since 1972, there's a lot for you to be proud of, and for us as well. The good things, the quality of treatment, it's sensational. You should be justly proud of that. The per capita flow, it reflects water conservation. It reflects the fact that there aren't any wet industries, and I've been around the Bay Area long enough to know that. But it also reflects a culture of conservation, another good thing. what you brought to the scientific table, which goes well beyond that in the RMP and demonstrates that the concern that we had in 1990 was not well-founded. And indeed, fresh water is not diluting wetlands and leading to a degradation of habitat. I'm really happy with the staff for the addition of the metric on the condition of the collection system. That may not be the perfect metric, but that's the conversation we need to start. That's a great thing. I'm really happy with the wet weather to dry weather flow ratio of 1.3 to 1. That's a tight system. That's excellent. That's I don't want to preclude the possibility that at least in terms of food, this may be an important thing in environmental benefit. I don't think we have to go there at this time. I think there's enough to be very happy with. I've participated in the restoration planning for the salt ponds. I know there's a lot of things that are changing the habitat down in the South Bay, and they're going to change water circulation. They're going to increase the amount of salt water, making the freshwater implications of the discharge less and less significant. But the incorporation of the flow actually into the design of the restoration efforts is not there. And in my mind, that's what would be there. I don't think it's precluded. I want to make sure that we have some discretion, and you have some discretion, to say, are we best continuing to reclaim wastewater as we get it closer and closer to the point where it can be used, at least indirectly, for human consumption? Or is the best way and the most cost-effective way to utilize it in habitat restoration? But you have an exemplary facility.
Can I also add something? To
sure.
Not that I want to have the last word, but I also wanted to mention something about the DPR work that you're doing. It's definitely you probably know about RenewIt, and we always talk about the fact, like, they're very proud of this whole project that's going on and the first demonstration of direct portable reuse, and I have been following it closely, and I commend you for efforts that you are making in that front.
With that, we'll call the question, the roll call vote on this.
Board Member
Ajani? Aye.
Board Member Kissinger?
Aye.
Board Member
Abitbouga?
Aye.
Vice Chair Aye. I guess I get to say so ordered.
There you go. Yeah.
So ordered.
Now we'll turn to consideration of Sunnyvale. You say you do have a card.
We do have a card from Melody Tovar, who we know in other incorporations. Melody, I assume that you've taken the oath.
I have taken the oath. So good morning. Melody Tovar, Regulatory Division Manager for the City of Sunnyvale's Environmental Services Department. And we are not contesting our permit today. We are just here to express our thanks to the staff for their work with us. We appreciate their accessibility and their willingness to hear us out and work with us on a permit we're pleased to move forward with. With respect to the process, it was really helpful for us to get some clarity on what the board was trying to aim for in writing the permit. And that helps us implement the permit better on the other side. With respect to the monitoring provisions, the changes they made were important to us because we really want to focus our resources on things that we understand the meaning of the outcome to, and they really helped us with that and gave us the flexibility to create a path for ourselves that will work for us. So thank you to the staff and to you for your consideration today.
Any questions?
No questions.
We have a staff recommendation.
As with San Jose, we have no supplemental and have no changes. So I recommend adoption of the revised tentative order before you. Somehow we lost one of our members for a moment, so better vamp. But
I think we should show them some love too. It's a very well run treatment plant. It doesn't perform quite as well. It's a little easier with a bigger plant, but it's also a very tight collection system. And in terms of the concerns that we've had about sanitary sewer overflows, that's really important. So if I had some balls, I can't juggle.
I'll ask Ms. Tovar a question. It occurred to me, but if she doesn't mind coming back down for a second while we're waiting. Really, just out of curiosity. You have these two open aeration ponds, and I was curious what happens during a big storm event, how you manage that.
So those are used as part of our routine process, and we carefully manage the flow every day, anticipating weather events so that we can use them for storage as well. So it is a careful part of how we manage the plant.
Yeah, I would imagine it's very, very tricky.
It is. We manage our discharge flows. They vary quite a bit compared to a flow-through plant like San Jose. So our flows will fluctuate quite a bit seasonally and even daily.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Sorry to make it.
No, not at all.
Tricky keeping a quorum here.
Yeah, great. Keeping the proverbial feet to the fire.
Right, difficult.
It's that seventh member.
Right. Well, and I will, while we're waiting, note that Nusha did bring up the idea of direct potable reuse of wastewater, and she's referring to the efforts that are being studied through the newly opened Silicon Valley Advanced Water Purification Center, which is taking the advanced treated water from the San Jose Santa Clara plant, taking it essentially across the street, doing microfiltration, reverse osmosis, and ultraviolet light, and getting it to a point where we could basically say it is purified, and then studying, is this something that can be either re-injected into groundwater or potentially put directly into the drinking water system. What used to be part of Department of Public Health but is now part of State Board, the Division of Drinking Water, is actually developing regulations for direct potable reuse. And so is while some of these studies are going on, not only through the Santa Clara Valley Water District, but also in Southern California, that the regulations are being put together. One of the biggest challenges for that, obviously, will be to get the public acceptance that this is something that can be done. But in many respects, this is already being done elsewhere in the world, and we're treating it to a level that it's potentially cleaner than the normal drinking water supply. The Silicon Valley Advanced Water Treatment Center has actually been set up to encourage tours and has very cleanly labeled, okay, here's the microfiltration area and what that accomplishes. Here's reverse osmosis.
And
what that
accomplishes. They offer you a glass of water at the end of the tour.
And indeed. And in July, when they had the kickoff ceremony, they got all of the directors at the Santa Clara Valley Water District up there who were, in theory, supposed to take the clean, purified water and put it into a plant up there. But one of them got so bold to drink it, and then they all drank it. And so I think all of the directors are still alive and surviving.
It's amazing how the world's changing, because I worked not very recently on a power plant in Hayward that Calpine developed, where they're taking most of the water from the wastewater treatment plant there for cooling purposes, but they just evaporate it off. Okay. And, you know, it's a real question whether that's a good use of a very increasingly precious resource. So.
And making the final connection here, I know the Santa Clara Valley Water District has been talking to the city of Sunnyvale about setting up a similar advanced water purification center at Sunnyvale plant to further expand use throughout the valley.
I mean, if you need to think about the fact that people who are in the space, they're doing this. They have been doing this for a while now, and the nature has been doing this for a long time. So it's not an impossible task. It's just like getting through the public perception, I think. And
you know what W.C. Fields said? You know, he doesn't drink water. You know what fish do in the water? With that, I'd like a recommendation for approval of the City of Sunnyvale order.
I'd second it. I'm sorry, I'll move it.
In a second.
I second that.
We need a roll call on this one.
Sorry.
Aye.
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 Vice Chair McGrath?
Aye. So ordered. Bringing us to the end of our agenda, we do not have any
further items, closed session, or that
sort of thing.
We need to officially close.
All right. We are adjourned. Thank you.